Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show. It is 7:07 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. To our friends, to our fans, to our families, welcome back to the show. We have missed you. To those of you new to the show, here is who we are and what we do. Each and every Saturday, right here on News 104.5 WOKV, I'm joined by the big guy, Sasquatch, the Yeti, 6'6", 232 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, Mr. Larry O'Neill. You know Larry from his duties on TV as the host of Larry's Garden. You've seen him about town landscaping. He's the tall, tall man in the small straw hat. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, certified master inspector from Home Pro Inspections. You've seen me on HGTV as the house detective, and possibly about town if you spend time in attics and crawl spaces. Larry's job here on the show is to be sure your grass is green, your fruit is sweet, and your flowers forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, my job is to be sure your home is safe, secure, efficient, and forever a source of pleasure and pride. From time to time, Larry gets a house idea, I get a garden idea, and we mix it up in the middle. But what makes the show fun for us is you. Your thoughts, your calls, your commentary. 340-1045. 340-1045. And if you're calling from anywhere in New England.
Anywhere in New England?
Yeah, New England.
Well, let's get a pinpoint spot.
Where is the stadium up there? What is the name of that town? Rutherford?
I don't know.
The Patriots? Foxborough.
Foxborough.
If you're calling from Foxborough,
okay.
Tom Brady may call.
Yeah.
He may move here after he retires this week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 904-340-1045. Sasquatch, large man.
Yeah, yeah.
Here is the triple crown of
triple
things
crown,
on my mind.
Three bubbles in your brain.
Yes, okay. Sir. And okay. They have just popped for you. Here we go. Out-of-state lenders,
mm-hmm.
Chimney fires, and the building department.
Okay.
All right. You know, there's a lot of ads you hear on the radio, you see on TV for various lenders that are all over the country.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And some of that can be beneficial to some people. But here is the downside of an out-of-state lender.
What's that?
They don't know anything about Florida.
Yeah.
So we routinely get calls in the office. Hey, my lender said you used the wrong form. Your company did this, they did that. And specifically to termite inspections, which are technically known in Florida as wood-destroying organism inspections, WDO, we have a state form that supersedes a national form. It's the law in Florida. We must use the state form. The national form put out by the Pest Control Association is called a WDI, wood-destroying inspection. It's used in the majority of states. It's not legal here. Whenever you're using an out-of-state lender, which I would honestly discourage, get yourself a great local loan officer. But anyway, should you be doing that, and you get pushback from your underwriter or that person managing your loan for you that says, hey, you sent us the wrong form for this WDO or termite inspection, know this. It's not the wrong form. You're dealing with the wrong person on the other end. So we deal with this probably twice a week. Where, you know, one of our home inspection customers has this frustration with their lender. The lender says that the local person is the bad person, and the local person is complying with the law. So get you a nice local loan officer, and if you've made the decision to go from an out-of-state person, know that they just don't know what's happening in Florida sometimes, and you got to work through it. So that's that.
Yeah, I mean, Florida's got a lot of termite issues, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
More so than any other state
in
the union, probably.
Likely so.
Yeah.
And there's two honest things that happen. One is the practical management of what's going on, and then the other is the paperwork and administration of the management.
Right.
So, and you have to be compliant with the paperwork in order to get the loan closed and comply with the law.
Right.
Chimney fires. We did it again this week.
caught another burned down.
Another home burned down due to a chimney fire. Pete's sake, make a decision. Get this thing cleaned and inspected. And I had a little TV time this week, which was a great fun, and explained that, again, cleaned is not inspected.
Right.
So if you go to Craigslist and you hire some, you know, Bubba with a shop vac, yeah, they may be able to clean it. That is different than having the equipment, that digital equipment, to actually scope the whole length of that to assure that it doesn't burn down. And I'll make you this.
Especially these chimneys haven't been used for like 10 years
That's
now.
That's the greater danger.
Right,
it's the moisture and the other damage that's caused in Florida. We've had several hurricanes. We've seen, you know, I'm chatting with the Chimney Champions guys. We have things that have been dislodged during the hurricanes, and nobody would have known. Not to mention, those are insurance claims.
Hey, can you imagine it has been like this in a long time, you know? But I predicted this.
This cold you did.
Yeah,
you said we're going to have a cold one.
Yeah, we're going to have a cold one.
I'm about fed up with it.
Yeah, every day it's 30-something degrees in the morning.
You know, I lived in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
All winter, it was 82 degrees with a 15-knot breeze out of the east.
Oh, wow.
All summer, it was 83 degrees with a 15.
No kidding.
The weather never changed, and you could set your
never
watch
changed.
By the afternoon
never
rain.
Never changed? No kidding.
No, it was beautiful.
Wow.
It's a gorgeous place.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of rough down there right now.
Yeah.
Beautiful place. And the third thing was the building department, specifically, they put out bulletins. The building department, this is the city of Jacksonville, essentially the same things apply everywhere. The first bulletin of the year, 118, is a reminder about roof replacement. It's this: not more than 25% of total roof area or roof section of any existing building or structure shall be repaired, replaced, or recovered unless the entire system or roof section is replaced to conform to current code requirements. What does that mean? So if you have a damage to your roof, whether it's tree damage or storm damage or whatever, if more than 25% of the total roof or more than 25% of a section, we'll talk about that in a second, more than 25% of a section is damaged, either the whole roof or the whole section must be replaced. Question comes in, what is a section? A section is essentially a surface or a plane for our purpose. So it might be the front face. If you have 25% of damage on the front face of that roof, you know, for our purpose in easy dialogue, the part facing the street, say 25% of that is damaged.
Mm-hmm.
If it's less than 25%, you can just make that repair. If it's more than 25% of that face, that whole face must be repaired.
The whole face?
The face, not necessarily the whole roof.
Okay.
And there's a little bit of a boogaboo there that gets involved with the insurance companies and gets involved with the individual roofers. Mm. It's more than 25% of the face or 25% of the roof. So sometimes people, and sometimes it's the right decision, they have 25% of the damage of the face and they replace the whole roof. That may be a good decision, but depending on how that's presented to your insurance company, it may or may not be an insurance claim. So know that it's very specific in the building code, and it's the Florida building code, and it's very specific of how it's administered by each county or building department, and how the roofer interpretation and the insurance company regulation. And all of those things blend together to put you ideally in the best spot, and if they collude and conspire and there's confusion, you can end up in not so good spot. You may have been entitled to an entirely new roof,
right?
Through your insurer, that's a good thing. Or you may have been able to make your roof complete and safe and dry with a considerably less expense. Like when Matthew came through, I had a brand new roof. What was it? 3 months before that, it was essentially a brand new roof.
Right.
So we were able, by complying with the manufacturer's position, the insurance company position, the city of Jacksonville's position, minimize the expense and maximize the insurer's ability to make me whole.
Right.
Navigating these nuances can be rough.
So did they replace the whole thing or?
The face.
The face, okay.
Well, the face where the repair was.
Okay, yeah.
My roof's a little goofy, so it turned out to be a relatively small face.
Right. Oh, they're going to reduce it down. Okay.
Yeah, well, I didn't need a whole new thing.
It's brand new.
Exactly. And I used the same company, which happened to be Fidus.
Was it seamless?
What do you mean seamless?
You know, we can't see any differences in the shingles.
Well, two things. One, you can't see any difference because they were so new, the same shingles, same contractor.
So you don't see them side
exactly.
by side.
Exactly. That surface of my roof, you cannot see unless you're on it or
so that's a good idea, you know, when you have one surface replacing that so you don't see the differences in the colors.
True. It's the same way when you paint a wall.
Right.
If you go from edge to edge of that one wall, it blends in much nicer.
Yeah.
So what's on your mind, sir?
Hey, here a little factoid is, you know, a lot of times our citrus and our vegetables will get a little sweeter. And during the cold, a guy called me and says, why does that happen? So, well, you know, that sugar is kind of acts as an antifreeze. And that's why a lot of times when plants, are getting prepared for cold weather, they have their sugar content increases. So when you pick your citrus after we get a little light freeze, that's where it has the highest sugar content.
Well, that's interesting.
Because it's an antifreeze in vegetables like broccoli. If you're picking your broccoli, after a couple cold snaps, it's going to be much sweeter than it is before the heat. You know, and this is, in fact, talking about broccoli, this is a good time to...
I love broccoli.
...to start broccoli. You know, the hard thing about growing broccoli in the state of Florida is because we have certain temperature fluctuations when it goes from, you know, cold and then warm. But right now it's staying cold, solid cold, and it's a great time to get out there and start your crop of broccoli.
Do you have to worry about broccoli in a freeze or it's hardy?
No, you can take it into 20.
Okay.
20. It's not going to be no problem. And if you want to start from seed, you know, it takes about maybe 6 to 8 weeks to get the seed up, and you can even start from that. So you can have actually a no-cost, basically, crop. You know, put a little bit of a compost out there. Low weed control right now is... Weed control is, you know, pretty much non-existent in this temperature. You know, there is a few weeds that are going to be germinating this time of the year and growing, but it's a great crop to get going. And there's, you know, sugar in your citrus. If you lived in an area where it didn't get a hard freeze, you know, the citrus didn't, freeze solid, it's a good time to pick.
Yeah, right, I've still got some grapefruit out, and I still got a few lemons left. I'll probably knock that out this week.
Yeah, they'll be much sweeter. Much sweeter.
Can I ask you a quick question about my spider plants?
Yes.
I had a big spider plant out in the yard that I call them pups. I don't know if they're really pups.
That's fine.
How they kind of reproduce themselves in the area around the pot when you don't tend it. Anyway, I put all those in pots. I have about 12 or 15 of them. Little tiny ones, you know, they're 4-inch pots. And anyway, they were doing good, and they got whacked this last couple days.
Yeah, they'll come back.
They'll come back?
Yeah.
Should I trim off what looks wilted and dead,
or leave those
just
on,
leave it alone?
Leave that on. If it's not bothering you, you know, you could trim
it. Doesn't bother me.
Okay.
I just wanted to recover.
Yeah, some people are bothered by that, so...
Well, yeah.
No, go ahead and leave it on.
Okay.
It gives us some protection. I mean, the grass took a serious downturn, you know what I mean? It got toasted in many parts of town, and the main thing is the grass will recover.
It got frozen.
Yeah.
It got so frozen it was toast.
Yes, but keep the water on it, and that will come back. Right, in fact, spring is going to be beautiful because of this cold weather.
Yeah,
all
I can hardly
wait. Bradford pears, the fringe trees, everything is going to break in unbelievable color.
I love it. It's 7:20 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. A very brief break. Right back to your calls. 340-1045. Love to hear from you. We'll be right back. It's 7:25 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspection. Need Larry during the week? Easy to find all the time online. Larry'sGarden.com. Also got the telephone. 346-1970, me, Wally Conway, online, gohomepro.com, or the telephone, 268-8211. Heading out to Atlantic Beach to check on with Jim and see if we can help him save his bougainvillea. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show, Jim.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
Happy to have you.
Yeah, so, what color is your bougainvillea?
Red.
Oh, that's
nice. Deep red.
Deep red. That's the easiest one. That's probably the most cold hardy one of them all. It's just got a little bit of burned leaves, and maybe some of the new growth is damaged, but it shall recover.
No, no, the leaves are gone. It's thorns.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that would be normal. That would be normal for this amount of temperature.
Good.
Long as you take a your fingernail or something sharp and scratch the bark and it's green underneath,
okay.
you should be in good shape. And then in the spring, if we had a couple more freezes, just start at the top, scratch back until you see green, and then remove the dead wood.
Okay, do that branch by branch, you're saying.
Yeah, branch by branch, and then you'll see some areas that are dead. The new growth is going to, the new tip growth is going to be dead because
right.
it's just tender, it hasn't hardened off.
Right.
So you want to remove those areas, and then a little bit of fertilizer, and you should be back in business. The deep, deep red one is the most cold hardy. They can freeze to the ground and come back.
That's good news.
Don't get discouraged on that.
Go to work yet. Wait a few more months.
You want to wait. You want to wait, and we got to wait till at least March. March, I would say end of March, because we started late on this cold weather, so it may
right.
extend into April. March, April. All right.
Hey, thank you so much. I'll go to work on it end of March.
All right, thank you, sir.
Yeah, rest up between now and then.
Your show.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah. That's the toughest decision, whether it's Jim's bougainvillea or my situation with my spider plants.
Yeah.
When clearly the frost or freeze has impacted the shrub, did I kill it? Yes or no, that's the first thing.
Right.
Should I trim it back, get the dead stuff off it? What is the best way for a given plant to
right.
give it the highest probability of a full and rapid recovery?
Right, right.
And not throw away something that's going to recover.
Right. In the northern areas, where they have perennial gardens and a lot of plants that will die completely to the ground, and like they'll be bare dirt, and then you come back 3 months later and they're luxuriant in growth, and it's a normal thing, when they burn to the ground, they'll come right back.
Yeah.
Nemocaria, walking iris is a good example, and I looked at some of those that had burned to the or got frost damage, but they'll come right back. Long as there's a root hardy, okay, that's the key thing. If they're root hardy, they'll survive.
Right.
Survive any type of cold weather.
So on a citrus, if you get whacked in a freeze, is there a way to predict if the rootstock will go through or if you'll still get grafted
through? The rootstock is probably going to go through no matter what, but you got to keep that top portion alive, the top portion, the bud,
right.
at the bud union.
And there's no way to predict that. You can't look at the damage and go, this is going to be a rootstock fruit.
No. Well, you can if you scratch the bark after 4 days after it hard freezes and it's black, it's done.
Yeah.
You got to dig it up. It's going to be, and it's dropped all of its leaves. That would be the first indication. And then you scratch the bark and it's black. It's not recoverable.
Not recoverable with the
it's dead.
Top fruit stock.
It's dead, yeah. Even the rootstock will come back, but it's a dead plant.
See, if one of mine gets whacked in a rootstock, leave it.
The warmest parts of, because I drive around everywhere in our area, all Nassau County, St. Augustine, all the way out into Lake City, the warmest parts of our area where the grass is really not even burned that bad is mandarin. Mandarin is a warm part.
Yeah.
Fleming Island, that's very, very warm. San Marco, very warm. The grass is not even burned in San Marco. A little bit of cold damage, but then you drive out there off of, Parental Home Road. It's off of, there's some areas right, not more than, say, 4 miles away, and the grass is fried. I mean, it's completely browned out. But San Marco, if you live in those areas there, even the beach areas are burned. Those are the warmest areas in the city.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, mandarins, when you look at a map or fly over it, it's surrounded on three sides by water.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons. And Fleming Island,
in a wide part of the river,
along that river area, is another very, very warm area. And then San Marco, warm area. But I drove from San Marco, and not more than 5 miles away, and the other it was
dropped to half a dozen degrees.
Oh yeah, all the grass is completely brown.
It's 7:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, then more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 340-1045. Stay with us. It's here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden, available at larrysgarden.com, is here with me. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, available at gohomepro.com. Checking in from Pontevedra, for the fireplace question is Brian. Brian, welcome to the Home and Garden Show, buddy.
Yeah, hey, Wally. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
Wally, I felt bad for you because they had so many plant questions this morning, and you were left in the cold.
I'm really but into gardening.
He's actually become a master. Wally Hayes admitted that after all these years, he's becoming more like me.
He misspoke. I have a higher interest in growing things in my yard. The only things that I can eat were all simple.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with that.
So what's up with the fireplace, Brian? Lay it on us.
Hey, what's up is I've entertained a couple of characters that come out here, and they say they know about fireplaces and stuff, but they can't find a manufacturer's label down in the refractor, so they don't know where to send me to order it. I've been online, and I find people that have refractor adhesive, but they don't have refractors. And then the other thing is during Hurricane Irma, the spark arrestor blew off the top of the chimney, not to be found anywhere. I asked all my neighbors, you know, couldn't be found anywhere. People probably made a UFO sighting out of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that's another issue, and then they tell me, oh, yeah, you can go down to a sheet metal shop and...
No, don't do that. So let's break it into its pieces here, Brian. We'll start with the easy one, replacing the cap or the arrestor or whatever on a prefabricated. Yeah. Pretty simple. Mm-hmm. Chimney Champions can knock that out for you. Very straightforward to look at the chase and all at the same time, inspect the whole deal. The refractory panels, which in a prefabricated fireplace is that kind of fake brick-looking cementuous liner. That's what protects the metal box from the intense heat. Those are easy to replace also. Your question about getting them the direct from the manufacturer in that same size, sometimes that's a challenge. That material comes in big sheets, and they just cut them to fit. So
I can cut them.
Depending on the size of the crack, how big is the crack or the damage?
Well, I removed it because it was all crumbling.
Ah, well, don't use it since it's out of there. But those.
Oh, no.
You saw how simple it was to remove them. They go back in just the same way. And you can buy a sheet of that refractory material, cut it, stick it in there, you're good to go. Recommendation while you're doing it, do all three sides.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm no fool. But where would I go to get the refractor?
You have to order it online most places. You might give a... There's a couple stores local, but it's pretty tough to get that stuff local.
Okay. Yeah.
Give Chimney Champions a ring, and they'll help you sort it or do it for you or whatever you want to do.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Wally and Larry. You guys have a good day.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Ryan.
All right. Over to Ryan on the Intercoastal. See if we can help him prune his lemon tree. Welcome, Ryan.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Awesome. Thanks.
So my lemon tree survived.
Yes.
Freezes, I believe, far. Anyways, we'll see after this last one. But assuming it did, was wondering, and it still is bearing fruit, and the fruit looks good.
Good.
But was wondering when is the best time to trim it back. It is kind of grown beyond what is within its capacities, and then some of the branches are dripping, so I want to give it a good trim.
Yeah.
I was wondering when I should tackle that project.
Late March, following the weather pattern, but I think late March is good. Late March is the great time. And then getting those lower branches limbed up, too, is kind of important because there's some disease that splashes onto the fruit, from the water bouncing on the ground. And it's keeping those lower branches, well off the bottom of the ground is a good idea.
All right. So late March. Thank you very
late
much,
March.
Gentlemen.
All right.
Thanks, Ryan.
When you're trimming your citrus tree, too, in late March, you're usually going to get a bumper crop. That's citrus trees really respond well with trim pruning. If you've had any problems getting your older tree to produce fruit, a good pruning.
I've been doing about 10% annual. I go to each branch, each place, on the outer perimeter of it,
yes,
and just clip back about 10%. Is that too
That's
much,
good.
Too little?
That's good. You keep a nice, shapely tree. There was a lady in Fernandina who said the most beautiful citrus trees because they were nicely pruned into shape, and they were just very ornamental. very ornamental, dense. I mean, great-looking trees. The best ones I've ever seen.
I can't say I had any motivation on the ornamental. My thought of it was...
Well, I mean, they look, you know...
My thought was so that the fruit-bearing branches are stronger.
Yeah, yeah.
Are
well,
stronger.
That, and also increases the yield, you know.
I'm
you
want
to keep your shorts because, you know, you don't have to get up on your...
It's true.
You know, your ladder, your little tiny little ladder.
Yeah, I can still reach the top of all of them.
You know, keep everything around 5 foot.
probably, the biggest one's probably 7.
Yeah, okay.
But when they fruit out.
But you got those dwarfs, right? You have...
The orange, my largest one is a dwarf, okay, so it tends to be shorter and
that's never
going to
get more than 10 feet.
Well, that's perfect.
Never. Okay.
Yeah, by the time it's at 10 feet, I'll be 70s, you know.
You'll be long gone.
No, I'm hanging in there. I'm doing good.
Okay.
Let's check in with Stephanie at Atlantic Beach and help her with her roots in a sewer pipe. Ooh. Welcome, Stephanie.
Yeah, thank you. I've had invasive roots invading my pipe. What's the best way to prevent them from coming back?
What kind of tree is it, Stephanie?
It's a live oak.
A live oak, okay. And they keep invading your sewer pipe. Well, okay, I'll tell you what you can do.
Well, this is a first time occurrence, and the house is 20 years old. So
okay.
Sure.
That's fairly rapid.
You're going to have to dig a trench along your sewer pipe, and you're going to have to get, like, a pond liner material. And, you know, you don't want to have it laying exact on top of the pipe, but, you know, maybe a couple inches away. Find your pipe, backfill it, and then kind of tuck around it. Because they'll go back underneath, and then they can come back around it. And then you want to put a between the when the trench ends, between the pond liner and the soil, the opposite side of the pipe, you want to fill that in with gravel. Gravel prevents the tree roots do not like to grow in air pockets. So you want to put some gravel in there, and they won't grow in air pockets. One thing they did years and years ago, I went to the University of Florida thing. They were trying to figure out how to keep sidewalks from lifting because the municipality spent millions and millions of dollars on fixing sidewalks, and they found that by putting gravel underneath sidewalks around a 6-inch layer, that the trees avoided them. They will not grow into that zone.
Over it or under it,
but they're not going to do that. So, you know, you could do that too. You know, you could put it on the other side, gravel around the pipe, put the plastic pond, the pond liner material there.
It's PVC pipe. I guess it doesn't make any difference, does it?
It's relatively rare in 20 years to have that occur with PVC pipe. It's possible you had a fracture or a leak in the pipe.
Yeah, you could have
also
a leak. Yeah, that's true.
They're looking for those nutrients, and in a properly adhered and connected PVC pipe, that's not an attractive place for a root. There's no leakage. It doesn't know there's anybody home.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'd look at all the Wally has a good point. I'd look at all the joints and make sure that they're all properly sealed because the sewer pipe's not under any pressure. So when they glue them together, there's no any way to find out, hey, I got a small leak.
There is a way. Yeah. They just never do it.
Okay, they never do it.
They don't pressure test it.
What is the way to do it?
Pressure test it.
Well, have Wally come out there.
No, we can't pressure test it.
Well, have the plumbing come out there.
Metro Rooter could do it.
Yeah, Metro Rooter. I use them a lot myself. Metro Rooter, come out there and pressure test your sewage pipe. Make sure. Yeah. Since you got this all dug
up. Did you already dig it all up?
Steph?
When you get it all dug up.
Dug up the sewer pipe or they already started the repair? How did you determine there were roots in it?
No. Actually, you know, there was a backup and it was affecting all the plumbing, bathroom plumbing. So he ended up, you know, just running an auger from the, from where it comes up underneath the deck.
Right. And they determined for sure it was roots in there?
That's what he told me. Yeah.
Did they use a camera?
No.
To me, you're looking at to use Larry's thought there. You know, you're going to burn $2,000 or $3,000 if you end up having to dig up that line and do other things. It'd be worth a couple of $100 to have a sewer scope go down there, and they run a camera right down there, and they'll know exactly what was there. Because the last thing you want to do is spend money thinking it was roots and turn out it was a sneaker or an old magazine or something somebody threw on the toilet.
Right.
So I'd spend a little money on the diagnostics.
I think me and Wally agree that diagnosis is the number one thing.
Yeah.
You know, you could just keep replacing parts, you know.
The camera will also tell you precisely where the blockage is distance-wise. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I live alone, so I don't think there was any sneakers or magazines, but you know what I mean.
Well, I use that rather than come up with some other idea. Yeah.
Something foreign that got its way in there.
I'd invest a little money in diagnostics, so I knew for sure.
What about the root kill? You guys don't recommend that product?
No.
Copper sulfate?
You can use copper sulfate, but that doesn't solve your problem. It does it for a while, but it doesn't really solve the problem. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You can continue. You have to continue to use it. Yeah. You know, but you know.
Oh, I see. So it's a preventative. It's.
Yeah. You have to continually use it. You're right.
But exactly. We're right back to it. If you're using the copper sulfate, and I see people do this more with septic than on other sewage. It's a Band-Aid. It's not solving what's causal. And very often it's a leak or other damage or void or penetration violation of the pipe itself. So if the pipe has damage and it has roots in it, using that almost like a topical treatment with a copper sulfate, eh.
So what do we recommend? We kind of recommend
the sewer scope.
The sewer scope, and you're saying the Metro Rooter does that?
Yeah. I've used them. Wally's used them. They're a good company. So you sewer scope, and then you pressure test, and then at that time determine what your next step is.
With the sewer scope, they may make the decision that they don't need to pressure test because they'll be able to see what's going on.
Right.
So if they see it's crushed somewhere or whatever.
Right.
All righty. And check in with us. Let us know how it play out.
So it's the colonoscopy of the piping.
It's exactly right. It's the same technology.
Yeah.
We use those. Yeah, it's the same technology. The ones we use in the on the home inspection side are only about 3 feet long, and they're not intended to be submersible. So, you know, we don't actually do that type of thing. The ones that intended to scope sewers are specifically made to be waterproof, and they're, you know, some of them are 50, 60 feet long. And can take care of the whole thing. On the chimney side, that's another device that operates the same way. Diagnostics.
Yeah, the thing I neglected to do was ask them how far down the pipe that the blockage was.
Right.
Yeah, that would have told you right there if it's, you know, not near the oak tree.
That's why diagnostics is so important. So if they said, okay, the blockage is 12 feet away and what the blockage is, now whatever remedy is appropriate is very precise. That's how you keep costs down. I watch people spend thousands of dollars on swag repairs rather than hundreds of dollars on diagnostics.
Right. And still not get it done.
It always gets less expensive.
It's like going to a car mechanic. He just starts replacing parts until he figures out which part is bad.
Right.
You know?
I was having a conversation with a nice lady yesterday who believes she may have a leak under her slab. And you know, one approach is repipe the whole house, you know, so I'd say $3,000, $4,000. Another approach is spend a few hundred dollars on diagnostics to say, where is it broken? And depending on where it is, you may be able to spot repair and be fine for another 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. But without diagnostics, you can't make that decision. Thanks a bunch, Stephanie. Yeah. Bye, ma'am.
All right. Thank you.
It's 7:50 here at News 104.5. Brief break. Jumping back on the phones to your calls at 340-1045. Stay with us. 7:54 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Had a beautiful day together with you. Very much enjoy you. Grateful that you're always here with us.
Yep.
Every single Saturday, 7 till 8 p.m. You know, big day tomorrow, 3 o'clock. We got the Jaguars.
Yep.
They're going up there today to defeat the New England Patriots tomorrow. And Larry and I, in support of the cause, we've made a decision.
Yes.
That when Tom Brady, after tomorrow's defeat, announces his retirement, we believe that he has served his cold city well and that he should relocate to Ponte Vedra, Home Pro Inspections, to transition Tom from being a professional football player to a life of leisure. We are offering to him. This is a one-time deal. This is only if he announces his retirement tomorrow after the defeat.
Okay.
Home Pro Inspections will inspect his home at no cost.
Okay.
Only if he announces his retirement tomorrow. And he must select a home prior to Valentine's Day. Larry is going to design a custom landscape
for
him.
Free termite inspection, too.
Termite inspection, too, to take care of the WDO. And Larry has been working on a special New England Patriots floral logo that Tom can have in his backyard. So he can sit in his rocking chair, lick his wounds from tomorrow's defeat by the Jaguars. So home pro inspections.
Giselle can help him through that stage.
Yes. We'll have another chair for her.
Take his mind off of it.
Yeah. So that's, you know, we are committed to tomorrow's victory.
Yeah.
And we are committed to a comfortable, respectful transition to retirement. For a defeated Tom Brady,
remember, Tom Coughlin has beat the Patriots.
He's in their heads.
So, I mean, we have some good potential.
Well, Tom's not retiring.
Yeah. So we're gonna
retirement is for old people and defeated people.
Yes. Yeah. Well, old people like
Tom's
you.
Not old. Tom's not old. Tom's not defeated.
Yes. We have a strong chance of making this happen.
So our Tom is not going to be defeated.
Yeah.
Their Tom is going to be defeated.
Uh-huh.
Right. I feel it.
You do?
Yeah. He's already starting on the excuses. Oh, my wrist hurts. No. My wrist hurts.
My wrist hurts. Okay.
Come on.
Trying to get us off our game, maybe.
Tape it up. Take the needle.
Messing with our minds a little bit, you know.
So anyway, that's our commitment to tomorrow's victory. I want to be sure that you...
I've got the Patriots logo all made out in flour so he can water that during his time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see him out there. Well, he can't water his own plants. He has a sore wrist.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure he can afford to hire somebody he can watch.
Think that might work out?
Yeah.
All right. One last thing I was noticing this week. I've had the opportunity. It's been very interesting, though it's sad, to inspect quite a few homes after hurricane damage.
Right.
You know, we've had a lot of that in our area.
Yeah, we've had.
After Matthew, after Irma, and man, oh man, that, you know, for many of us, we've kind of forgotten about Irma and we've forgotten about Matthew because they didn't impact us.
A lot of people still being doing repairs.
Man, I've been, you know, in up in your area, really, in San Marco, still seeing the aftermath that's not yet repaired from flooding. Mm-hmm. Both in businesses. I have a buddy that owns a business
down
in San Marco.
Oh, yeah, down the north side of San Marco.
Business is still not recovered. And I was out in Ponte Vedra Tuesday or Wednesday, I guess it was, looking at a home, a gorgeous home, big home, multimillion-dollar home on the oceanfront, and that the home survived really well in one sense, though the dune and all that other stuff came back, you know, I don't know how many feet, 100 feet, 200 feet, and what was a sloping dune is now a precipice that drops off. So you go out of the back of the house, into the pool, and it drops down probably 20, 30 feet. So it almost looks like California now, how you're...
Oh, yeah.
It goes out and goes, vroom, drop down. I'm like, oh, my gracious.
Aren't they going to replenish all that area, they said?
Yeah, they're building a big kind of a seawall out there along a big stretch of the water. And I was like, holy smoly. So It just hasn't quite ended. Hey, there's Jack on the west side. Let's see if we can help him. Right, Jack, we got a minute, buddy. What's up with your fireplace?
Well, I've got a fireplace. It has one of those. It doesn't vent to the top. It's got one of those covers inside, gas fire logs.
Yes.
Getting a lot of air coming through from the side. So can I plug that up?
No.
Not at all.
Well, I'm not understanding. If the air is part of the system, if it's makeup air, don't plug that. If it's outside air that's kind of leaking through the sidewall, you can sure plug that. What you got to be careful is to make sure that what you use doesn't burn.
Yeah, I was thinking about using whatever caulking is available.
Jack, why don't you email me a picture of that?
If it's just good old
air infiltration, that's okay. If it's impacting and adjacent to that firebox, you need a caulk or sealant that's appropriate for that temperature.
Yeah, there's some fire resistance.
Yeah, and I can help you find that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.